Hello and welcome to this Friday the 13th edition of Catholic Answers. Did you just find that out, Darren? It's Friday the 13th? And you didn't even know you were having a good day. And now probably something bad will happen just because I said it. I'm Cy Killett, your host, and we do have a very, very good show lined up for you. We try to do Good Friday shows. We try to do a good show every day, but Friday we try to, you know, make it something that you'd enjoy listening to. Say you were, if you were in traffic on a Friday heading home, you know, and we got that kind of show for you today. Second hour, we'll do open forum for non-Catholics with Tim Staples. First hour, we're going to do the church in the news. And there's been a lot of church in the news lately. So if you've got church in the news questions, 888-318-7884 is the number. And that's the only number I'm giving out today. 888-318-7884. I don't have to give out the other number because that part is over 3 days of asking you for your support. And we just closed the show yesterday saying we'll let you know how we did because it was a squeaker, and it really turned out to be a squeaker. We made our goal by $900. By the time we got in here this morning, after everything had come through last night, made our goal by $900. And it's above that now, right, Darren? We're up a few thousand over that. So thank you. Thank you. We're all exhaling here and we're all delighted. We don't have to bother about that for a few more months. And we know 2020 has been a tough year, and people made it possible for us to continue to do what we do despite the hardships of this year. So thank you. I really don't even know how to say thank you. I mean, our entire existence depends on that. So when someone gives you something that makes it possible for you to continue to exist, it's hard to say thank you robustly enough. But just tons of gratitude around here. So when you're going to do the church in the news, you want somebody who knows the church, somebody who knows the news, and there's probably nobody anywhere more qualified in those areas, in that combination of areas, than J.D. Flynn. J.D. Flynn is editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency, a fine news gathering and disseminating agency here in the United States and around the world. J.D. Flynn, thank you for being with us.
You're so nice, Cy. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know I'm a fan of you, and I'm a fan of here's the deal, JD. This is the way I honestly feel about it. I'm a fan of news. Like, I'm not a fan of what is in most newspapers because it has nothing to do with news. I'm not a fan of what's on the TV news because it has almost nothing to do with news. Opinion has taken over everything. But I'm a fan of people who go out and report the news, like dig in and report the news. And that's what you guys do. And yeah. I love that.
You got to grind, right? I mean, reporting the news is to grind. And
right.
See a potential first story and work sources and work information and get there. And I'm glad that I have a team that's committed to doing that.
It's one of the best things about being an editor, as you are, is you can make other people go out and do all that hard work. So,
yeah, so you
congratulations
know,
on that. Yeah.
thank you.
Yeah, you guys have broken some big news in the church this year. But I think that the main thing that people are going to want to talk about this week, and we have not yet spoken about it at all on the air, so I'm going to just ask you about it real quick. The McCarrick Report. We had 2 years ago the promise that the McCarrick Report would be forthcoming. And, you know, I'm a Catholic, lifelong Catholic. 2 years, that's like a quick turnaround in Catholic world. Like, yeah, we don't do two years. We do 100 years.
Right.
So I'm not among those who's like, oh, finally. But I am glad that it's out. But you've read it. As a matter of fact, I heard that you've read it twice. Which makes you a saint, I think. Give us the rundown of what's in the McCarrick Report, why we should be interested in it, and does it do what we hoped it would do?
Yeah, so on October 6, 2018, Pope Francis announced that the Vatican Secretary of State would commission a review of all of the archives of the Vatican offices, which are called dicasteries, a review of all the Vatican dicasteries archives related to the career and ministry of Theodore McCarrick. So at that point, you remember the first revelations had come out about McCarrick in June 2018, and then shortly after that in July, he resigned from the College of Cardinals. And in August of 2018, the first letter from Archbishop Vigano came out that raised more alarms about those allegations. And in October, the Pope said, we're going to do a review. And sure enough, a review was done. And we have now waited for that review to be complete. We initially heard about a year ago that it was going to be coming out any time. And then it came out just this week. And that review is a sort of a chronological account of the ecclesiastical life of Archbishop, former Archbishop Theodore McCarrick. So starting with his time as a priest of the Archdiocese of New York, he was ordained in the 1950s in the Archdiocese of New York up to his retirement from the Archdiocese of Washington, where he'd been Archbishop, and his resignation from the College of Cardinals and the allegations that surfaced about him in 2018. And the report gives a chronological account of that, and it looks at some factors of what happened when allegations were made about McCarrick regarding his misconduct with seminarians and young priests, and how the church handled those things. It doesn't answer every question. It doesn't answer questions about McCarrick's financial misdeeds. We know that he controlled a discretionary fund that contained hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that he used that fund in various ways in the church. It doesn't answer questions that people have asked about kind of McCarrick's influence networks and bishops who are still in the church now. But it does answer some questions about how the Holy See responded when allegations were made about McCarrick. It contains sections in which an investigation was conducted in 2000 in which some bishops lied to Pope St. John Paul II and to the Vatican about McCarrick. It contains earlier allegations that had been made about McCarrick, letters from the late Cardinal John O'Connor, who had raised issues about McCarrick in 1999. So it gives us some aspects of what happened with McCarrick. I think that's what everybody wants to know, is what happened with McCarrick. And the report gives us some aspects of that.
Again, our number 888-318-7884. It's a Church in the News this hour with the editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency, J.D. Flynn. I do recommend that you visit the Catholic News Agency for your Catholic news. 888-318-7884. A couple of the headlines, and I want to just run them by you, and you can give me your take on whether the headlines capture a reality. Headline one, Saint Pope John Paul II is not covered in glory, but may have missed his chance to interrupt the career of Cardinal McCarrick before it reached its most damaging phases.
That's an extremely long headline.
I forgot you're an editor. You're right. That is a long.
Pope John Paul II is not covered in glory, but may have missed his chance.
All right. Wow. Come on, Flynn. Just answer the question.
There is narrative that suggests that Pope John Paul II knew about McCarrick and promoted him to be the Archbishop of Washington anyway.
Yeah.
Here is the deal. Allegations were made about McCarrick in 1999 by John Cardinal O'Connor, saying that McCarrick had shared a bed with seminarians and had done so coercively and inappropriately. John Paul II asked the Apostolic Nuncio to the United States, kind of the Pope's ambassador to the United States, to look into that, and the Nuncio asked some bishops about it. And if they had seen misbehavior on the part of McCarrick. We know that some of those bishops had been in the direct presence of McCarrick when he had done sexually abusive things. But they lied to the Nuncio, and they lied to the Vatican. They lied to John Paul II. And so the allegation that John Paul II received was that McCarrick had been inappropriate with seminarians, but not to the extent of what we now know. When people asked about it, bishops lied to him about it. And then the Nuncio, who was responsible for compiling the report, reached out to people who made a defense of McCarrick and said he's a moral and upstanding man. Bishops who said that about him, he's a moral and upstanding man, and we think there's nothing that should stand in the way of him being promoted. And after all of that, McCarrick, who had heard about this investigation, wrote a long letter, a very manipulative letter to Cardinal Zivic, then Archbishop Zivic, John Paul II's secretary. And in that letter, he said that he had never done anything wrong, and there were people who wanted to hurt him and people who wanted to hurt the church, and really playing on John Paul II's experience in communist Poland when there would be disinformation campaigns against priests with some regularity by communist authorities. And after all of that, John Paul II permitted for him to go to Washington. Now, in retrospect, with the information that we have, we know that that was the wrong decision. Even without all the information we have today in 2020, I don't think someone who was suspected of those things would be appointed the Archbishop of Washington, or at least I hope to heck they wouldn't be.
Well, I hope.
At the time, all I can do is hope, I suppose. But at the time, did John Paul II know everything that we know and say, I don't care, and he's going to go to Washington anyway? No, that's not the story at all. The story is more complicated than that and represents sort of institutional failure at a lot of levels.
888-318-7884. We're doing the Church in the News this hour with J.D. Flynn, editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. All right, so I'll give you the other headline, and this one I'll do more headline length, okay? And then we'll I'll let you address this, and then we'll come back after a quick break and let people ask their questions about the Church in the News. Archbishop Vigano is kind of the person who became a household name. This is not the headline yet, by the way. This is just the question, Flynn. because he kind of blew the whistle on all of this. Headline: Vigano implicated in not following up on claims of sexual abuse.
Yeah, the report says that in the early 2010s, I want to say 2012, Archbishop Vigano was directed by the Vatican's Congregation for Bishops to look into a new allegation about McCarrick and to contact some priests and contact other people who might have information about this, and that he didn't do it. That Vigano was given a direction to look into allegations about McCarrick, but he didn't do it. He didn't follow the instructions to investigate those allegations.
Yeah.
Vigano has said that that is a false assertion, but the report certainly provides some evidence of that, having been given that instruction, and then no evidence of him having followed up. So that's where it is.
Okay, fair enough. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with calls for you. I do want to let you know, JD, and also let the listener know that at some point during this hour, I will ask you about Cardinal Pell and some of the things that have come out since Cardinal Pell was released from prison in Australia, where he was unjustly imprisoned. Because I know that you're at the heart of some of the reporting on that. It broke ground there, important ground there that no other journalists had exposed. But we'll do that after we come back and after we let some other people ask you questions first for a little while. We'll do that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Check out EW10's official YouTube channel.
Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your grateful host. And our guest is J.D. Flynn, who is the editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. It's Church in the News. You can ask anything you want about the Church in the News. A bunch of folks on the line with their questions. If you'd like to get into the line with your questions, it's 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Let's head down to Florida. Joe in Pensacola, Florida, listening on 103.3 FM. You are first, Joe. Go ahead with your question for J.D. Flynn.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I heard a couple of weeks ago that the Holy Father had mentioned something that sounded like he was rather positive about same-sex civil unions. And I was just wondering what exactly he meant by that, and how does that square with the Catholic doctrine about homosexuality?
Thanks,
Joe. Yeah, that's a great question, Joe. So a couple of weeks ago, a documentary came out made by a secular filmmaker, a secular documentarian. The name of the documentary was Francesco. And that documentary contained an interview with the Pope that the Pope had conducted a few years earlier, but had never been aired or released, in which the Pope was talking about civil unions and saying that the Pope said something, the exact quote I might not get right, but the Pope said essentially we need to have a civil unions law to give some legal protection, and in the context of talking about homosexual couples. That made headlines all around the world. And the reason, of course, is because the Church believes that marriage, not just believes, but knows that marriage is the union of one man and one woman, a partnership of one man and one woman for the whole of life. That's ordered to the procreation and education of children and the good of the spouses, but it's a union of one man and one woman. And so when the Pope said we need to have a civil unions law, it made headlines around the world. There are many people who said that the Pope is potentially going to endorse same-sex marriage, or the Pope opening a door to same-sex marriage or to liturgical blessings of homosexual couples in the Church, or something like that. It later emerged that when the Pope was being asked about those questions, he was being asked about a specific situation in the country of Argentina, where he comes from. In 2010, while he was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, there was an initiative in the country of Argentina to create legalized same-sex marriage. And during the context of the bishops sort of responding to that, during a meeting of the bishops of Argentina, now Pope Francis, then Cardinal Bergoglio, suggested that maybe the bishops should suggest a compromise measure, that there would be a civil unions law as a compromise measure between those who are advocating for same-sex marriage and those who were opposing it. And ultimately, the bishops in Argentina opposed that suggestion. They said, no, we don't want to offer a compromise measure. And the reason is because we think that a civil unions law, seeming to support a civil unions law, would be seeming to support a structure of sin, sort of legal a legal consent to something which is sinful. And so that didn't go forward. That's what the Pope was being asked about. Now, in 2003, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which is the principal doctrinal office of the Church, said that Catholics can't support civil union laws like that because they seem to give implicit support for homosexuality, for same-sex couples, and that's contrary to the teachings of the Church and would give a confusing message about marriage. So this suggestion in 2010, Cardinal Bergoglio had made in Argentina wasn't supported by the bishops for that reason, and they moved on, and he didn't advocate for it publicly or anything like that. But he did raise it again in this interview when he was recalling what had happened in 2010. So there is a tension between what he suggested in 2010 and what the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith had said about this issue in 2003. That tension is about how the Church and how Catholics should respond to the issue of homosexuality in public life, not concretely about same-sex marriage, homosexual marriage, which is a matter of doctrine for the Church. So there's a disagreement between Pope Francis, then Cardinal Bergoglio, and the CDF, the Vatican, about an issue that is a matter of prudential judgment, something about, which Catholics have to make a prudential judgment about regarding this issue of civil unions in society. And most of the time, Catholics have landed on the idea that civil unions are a very bad idea for just the reasons that I stated, and that they're often kind of a gateway, a conduit to full legal recognition of same-sex marriage. But for the actual doctrinal question of same-sex marriage itself, Pope Francis didn't say anything about that, and has in fact in the past and since then affirmed that he affirms and holds the teachings of the Church regarding marriage. It's kind of a complicated issue, but I hope that answers it a little bit.
Does that do it for you, Joe?
A little bit. I'm just trying to get to the heart of what the Holy Father was trying to say and what his opinion of that really is.
I think you're in company with lots of people, Joe, as a matter of fact. I think that's exactly, I mean, many people are speculating on what the Holy Father meant, but I think part of, unless I'm misunderstanding what you're saying, JD, it's just speculation at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, what several Argentine bishops have said is that the Pope was suggesting that a civil union law could be kind of endorsed as a compromise measure to stop the passage of a same-sex marriage law. And a lot of bishops thought, no, that's a bridge too far. We can't do that. But what his reasoning for that was, whether he thinks that's a positive good that should be, that should be pursued of its own, or whether or not he really saw that as a compromise measure, as the bishops have said, again, I think anything about that would be speculation. What we do know is that the Pope has not rescinded in a formal way the 2003 document from the Vatican that applies the Church's teaching to this situation. And he has affirmed that he believes in the Church's teaching regarding marriage. And after that, kind of, there's a lot of context that we don't know and a lot of things that we don't entirely know about that 2010 decision and what his motivations were there. I wish, Joe, honestly, I wish I could give you more of an answer. It's just that there's a lot we don't know.
Joe, thanks. I appreciate it. It's Church in the News this hour. J.D. Flynn, our guest. J.D. is editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. Let's go to Walt in Malvern, Pennsylvania, listening on where is he listening? On the TuneIn app. Oh, I know what the TuneIn app is. Okay, yeah, listening on the TuneIn app. Go ahead, Walt, with your question for J.D.
Okay, first a little background. In 2015, I went to a James Martin talk here in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And at that talk, he said that Pope Francis was, quote, the most gay-friendly pope that ever was on the papacy. And he specifically mentioned that he was appointing, quote, gay-friendly bishops. And he specifically mentioned Cardinal Farrell, Cardinal Supich, and Cardinal Tobin from Newark, New Jersey. What I'd like to know is, do we know if McCarrick influenced him in these appointments?
That's, I think, something a lot of people hoped would be in the report. I have not read the report, J.D. Do we have any information on, I mean, it seems like a very logical and perfectly reasonable question. You have a cardinal who's really disgraced but was very influential. Is his influence still present in the hierarchy of the church? Do we have an answer to that?
Yeah. It has been suggested by people, including Archbishop Vigano, in either his first or second letter, that McCarrick exercised influence over the appointment of some bishops in the United States, including, I think, some of the ones that you mentioned. The report says that there is not evidence of that. It says, despite public speculation that McCarrick recommended Archbishop Tobin for the Newark Archdiocese, McCarrick never raised the possibility of Tobin for that position. McCarrick's correspondence with Pope Francis contained suggestions as to whom he thought would be a good candidate on another diocese for the Chicago Archdiocese, the bishop chosen by Francis, Archbishop Blaise Supich, was never mentioned by McCarrick. So according to the report, that speculation about McCarrick influencing those appointments is not true. What I can tell you is what people have said and what the report says, and the report cites some letters from McCarrick that are not contained in the report, so I can't read them firsthand myself. But according to the report, McCarrick, between 2013 and 2018, there's no evidence, according to the report, that McCarrick during that time influenced a decision-making regarding episcopal appointments in the U.S. So that's what the facts say, at least, but there's, you know, there we are.
Right, right. But it would be a different question then to ask if the system that allowed for the advancement of someone who was manifestly misusing his office completely, might have also permitted the advancement of other men equally willing to misuse their office. That seems to me that's a reasonable question.
I think it's a completely reasonable question. So what we saw in the report is that there was a system in which the recommendations of bishops that were not truthful carried weight, in which bishops sort of covered for people who were their friends. And there's a huge question about the relationship between money, graft, and some of the covering that we don't have answers to. The report does not say this system has been entirely reformed. In fact, the report gives us a chronological accounting of what happened, but it doesn't at the end. You know, sometimes you read a report like this and you'd expect at the end to find a set of recommendations or a set of changes that have happened since then. The report doesn't have that stuff. So, can we know definitively that that the same kind of the same kind of reasoning might go into episcopal appointments? No, and unfortunately we can't, and that's a hard thing to grapple with, and I think to wrestle with.
I'm sorry to keep pursuing this, but I want to stay on this for a minute because I want to understand some things, and Walt raises very serious concerns. But you get this sense from the report, at least from what I have read about the report. As I said, I have not read the report, that Pope Benedict XVI, instead of taking canonical measures against former Cardinal McCarrick, tried to deal with it on a less formal level by just getting rid of him, basically saying go away and stop appearing in public. Now I'm using colloquial language, but this is my question to you. People are saying, well, there should have been a canonical trial, there should have been this or that, But does the church have any really effective apparatus for investigating it? It seems to me there's no apparatus. Like, there's no church FBI, in other words. And
right.
I'm not saying that facetiously. It's like,
no,
in
it's
the
true.
U.S., if you want to have a trial, well, first you have to have law enforcement officials that go out and do investigations. There doesn't seem to be any mechanism like that in our church.
Well, we do. There is, if a person is accused or there's evidence to suggest that the person has committed a canonical crime, what's called a delict, there is a mechanism in canon law for the bishop or the Holy See to initiate what's called a preliminary investigation, which is essentially a criminal investigation. It's important to remember that at the time that Benedict XVI kind of, yeah, I think told McCarrick to go into a quiet retirement, not travel and not do these other things. And I think maybe we should say during the pontificate of Benedict XVI, the Congregation for Bishops said that, because I'm not sure the report directly ties that action to Benedict himself. But during the papacy of Benedict XVI, that was the way in which it was handled. And it's important to understand that at that time, allegations that McCarrick had abused children had not yet been made. And allegations about McCarrick and seminarians and priests were... what the Vatican knew about those allegations was vague. They did not know, for example, that McCarrick had already been witnessed by several people sexually assaulting a priest or other things. So they were working with limited information even with regard to an investigation.
J.D. Flynn is our guest. I'm sorry I have kept callers waiting, but the McCarrick, the Walt's question in particular, very pointed, and it's worth getting to the bottom of these things if we can. But we'll continue to expand the scope of our conversation and welcome more questions for J.D. Flynn on the Church in the News right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
We're waiting for your call. Grab that line and get on board.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is J.D. Flynn. J.D. is editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency with reporters in all the places you would want to have Catholic reporters. Among them, Rome, and lots of fine reporting from the reporters all over the world, including here in the United States at the Catholic News Agency. So when we want to do Church in the News, JD's the perfect guy to ask questions to. I am going to ask some questions about what happened in Australia, and we'll get to all that momentarily. But or maybe a caller will want to have a better question than I have about that. And you're always welcome. Your calls are welcome at 888-318-7884. But I do want to let I have kept callers waiting. We've dealt a great deal with Cardinal McCarrick. Let's deal with some other things. Let's go to Abby in South Dakota, who is next. Abby, you there with us? Hi, Abby. Oh, I know you.
Okay, so
go ahead.
Yeah, my question was about the betrayal of Catholics in the media, especially with the election, with President-elect Joe Biden claiming that he's Catholic, and with all the outrage over the refusal of him getting communion. I'm just wondering your opinion on that and how you think that will change in the future if he does win the election.
Specifically for JD, how Catholics are treated in the media, is that what you mean?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, no, that's great, Abby. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a good question, Abby. I think, first of all, I think it's important to understand there's a dwindling ability and expertise of many of the mainstream organs of media in this country to cover any religion with real expertise and aptitude, because newspapers are cutting increasingly their religion reporters, and many TV news stations never had religion reporters to begin with. So there are fewer and fewer journalists who are sort of experts in reporting on religion. As a consequence of that, it is sometimes true that journalists who cover religion rely on stereotypes or tropes far more than they ought to. And I think it's also true that at times you can see a bias in the media either against religion, and at times just a fundamental misunderstanding of what motivates religious people and how they understand themselves. I think that goes beyond Catholics to just a systematic inability to cover religion well in many outlets of secular media. There are data that says that journalists tend to be less often as religious than most Americans do, and they tend to identify as more politically liberal than many Americans do. And so, if you don't have expertise in something, then it can be harder to check your bias, and those biases can float into the coverage. And I think it's often the case that Catholics experience bias coverage, or coverage that doesn't fundamentally understand what's important to us and why it's important to us, or fundamentally understand the landscape of the Catholic Church in America. So I definitely think that's true. I'm not sure if that's exactly the fullness of your question, Sai, maybe you have an insight on that too.
You know what? I'll just ask Abby. Abby, did you want to follow up with any other question?
Yes, I was actually wondering. I'm in eighth grade, and we recently did a saint project. And most of the saints, they started out with Christians being portrayed in the media just as we are being portrayed now. I'm wondering if you think that a wholesale persecution is possible.
Ah, gotcha. First of all, Abby's in eighth grade. I'm
awesome.
Yeah, I would like to call and ask questions like she's asking when I was in eighth
grade.
Yeah,
this is a really insightful and intelligent question. Yeah.
Thank you, Abby. I appreciate the call. So basically, she's talking about that the saints in the past having faced basically lies like Catholics do today in the media. Yeah. And she's wondering if you see a wholesale persecution of Christians coming here in the United States.
I definitely see, as I said, a misunderstanding and often a misrepresentation of Catholics in the media, and at times a confirmation bias that plays against Catholics and their values, and a reduction. A lot of times I think the media so profoundly misunderstands religious faith that it portrays it as a series of sort of political positions or political propositions instead of an entire way of life and way of being and looking and seeing the world. So, I see that. Do I think that equals persecution by the media of Christians? At times, I think that media bias against Christians is a serious problem, and it definitely needs to be addressed. There are other kinds of, to be sure, persecutions against people of faith in our country and persecutions against religious liberty in our country that are very serious that I think we need to pay attention to. People of faith have, I think, ever-growing challenges to their freedom of conscience in their professional life, in their business life, in their public life, even in their family life. There are more and more, it seems, litmus tests that make it hard for a Christian to engage on kind of an equal playing field in the public square. And we need to be attentive to that. There is it's clear that there's often a kind of corporate virtue signaling that runs contrary to Christian values and Christian positions, which tends to increase, I think, a marginalization of believers from public square, from public culture, from public life, and that along with a increasing sort of political antagonism towards people of faith can indeed lead to challenges to our ability to live our faith as we're called to in the public square. Now, I think if that's true, it's been true for Christians in many, many eras and many, many periods in Christian history. And the real challenge, Abby, it seems to me, is how to respond. So we can respond certainly by proclaiming our right to our religious liberties, and we should do that. We can respond by proclaiming our right to, you know, our constitutionally protected rights, and we certainly should do that. But if we see the secularization of culture and an increased antagonism of culture and state towards Christians, then it seems to me that the most important response for us is to evangelize, to see in that an increasing sickness in our culture, an increasing aversion to things which are true, good, and beautiful. And if that's true, then the best thing that we can do is proclaim Christ, because we know that Christ, who himself was persecuted and crucified, is with us and is also the answer to the needs and desires and fears and wants of every human heart.
Okay, Abby?
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm a little bit curious about, sorry, I have a lot of questions. With the recent spike in holidays, the holidays are approaching really, really fast, and we have the recent spike in coronavirus. The CDC has restricted our gatherings and even our religious celebrations for events like Christmas and the Nativity. What are your thoughts on that?
Wait, before he does that, I got to tell you, Abby, learn Italian, because JD is the editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. He's going to need reporters in Rome. You are clearly cut out to be a reporter or bureau chief in Rome.
It's true. You've got a future in journalism, Abby.
So will you
sure.
just work on your Italian in high school, Abby?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. Now, now we'll let JD answer.
There have been bishops who have recognized religious discrimination or failure to accommodate reasonably and fairly religious exercise in the application of public health norms during the coronavirus pandemic. So Archbishop Corleone in San Francisco comes to mind, who recognized that restrictions on religious gatherings in San Francisco were extremely onerous, to the point of being practically laughably imbalanced as compared to restrictions on other public settings. And as a consequence of that, he did something awesome. I mean, he wrote to the mayor a few times and said, "Knock it off." But then he started doing something awesome. He started having Eucharistic processions through the city, because it's not against the rules to walk through the city together. And he started having masses, lots and lots of masses in the cathedral square at the same time, because outside you could only have, I think, 10 people at a mass at a time. So you'd have a whole bunch of priests come down to the cathedral square, and in different areas they would have mass. We need to be, I think God calls us, the church tells us that we have an obligation to be good citizens and to recognize that we have an obligation to work towards the common good and to respect the legitimate requirements of legitimate public authorities, even if we disagree with them. But that has to be balanced with our right to religious practice, which is a right that doesn't come from the Constitution, but from God. And the challenge, I think, of believers right now is to discern when, in fact, our religious practice is being unfairly impeded, unjustly impeded, when, in fact, our right to religious freedom is being ignored or discriminated against, and when, at the same time, we have an obligation towards the common good and towards a legitimate deference towards legitimate public authorities. And that discernment is very obviously a tricky one for us right now, and I think we're still working that out.
I'm not going back to Abby. She's too good at this. So
that's right.
I don't want to deal with Abby anymore. Abby, thank you. You're a great call.
Great job, Abby.
She could do Meet the Press. She could be on Meet the Press. Ed in North Platte, Nebraska, listening to EWTN on Channel 130. Sirius XM Satellite Radio, you are next. Your question for J.D. Flynn.
Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. I was looking, JD, probably for a comment and maybe even an answer to the question of how do we respond when some of our non-Catholic friends ask the question. Our President Trump has been very diligent in working to protect the lives of the innocent unborn, especially in abortion, and has worked and said publicly that he will not allow anything to prevent us from exercising our freedom of religion, even in the public square. And he's also worked very hard to make sure that the Little Sisters of the Poor weren't forced to pay for contraceptives in their health care plans. And also, he's been a very global proponent of the protection of human life, even at the United Nations.
Ed, I got to ask you to get to a question for JD, please.
Okay, so the question is, how does this square with the Pope's apparent denigration of Trump?
That's fair enough. The Pope seems awful tough on President Trump sometime. How does that square?
Okay. Well, I'd be very glad to answer your question, but I want to ask you a little bit of a favor, too. I'm hoping you'll say hi to my friend, Father Mark Seeker, if you're in North Platte. With that said, it's very clear that it's very clear. I mean, it seems very clear and very, very obvious that Pope Francis and President Trump have divergent views on a number of different policy issues, especially those related to immigration and refugee admission to the United States and things like that, and probably in reference to sort of social safety net issues as well. I think they're aligned on issues related to life and issues related to religious liberty. The Pope has been really frequently spoken out against the scourge of abortion and against legal protection for abortion. The Pope has frequently spoken out about the importance of religious liberty protections. But I think it's certainly true that on other policy issues, the Pope as a person, not sort of as a claiming something ex cathedra or dogmatically or something like that, but the Pope as a person has a different set of policy priorities and positions than does President Trump. And that happens. I guess the thing is, we as Catholics are never completely at home in any political, under any political institution. We're never completely comfortable in any political party, and our faith will always sort of, whatever political party we belong to, whatever politician we support, I think our faith will always compel us to support what's good, but to challenge a politician on the things that are not good about his platform or that are discordant with our faith on a particular politician's or party's platform. Where our party is the party of Christ, and so partisanship can, in certain ways, be in conflict with that, and we have to speak prophetically. And I think the Pope too has had to speak, has as a Christian spoken in certain ways on his own views on political issues, and those are a different set of views on some of those issues than Trump. But I'm not sure that that is a complete and total shift, because a split, because I think they are aligned on those issues of life and religious liberty, and there are probably other points of commonality too.
Thanks, Ed. I appreciate that. We got to take a quick break. A bunch of folks on the line. We're going to try to get to everybody's question when we come back. J.D. Flynn, our guest editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. We're talking about the church and the news this hour. Next hour, Tim Staples will be here, and we'll do open forum for non-Catholics. Right back after this.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. J.D. Flynn, our guest. I'm going back to callers, but I said I was going to ask you about Cardinal Pell from Australia. It's a story where the more you heard about how Cardinal Pell was treated, at least in my case, I'm sure every person would come to their own conclusions on this, but at least as I became more aware of how Cardinal Pell was treated, it became more and more likely in my mind that he had simply been mistreated by the criminal justice system in the state of Victoria. I believe it was Victoria in Australia, to be honest, a history of anti-Catholicism seemed to raise its ugly head in his case. But in recent weeks, you have done some reporting on connections between a cardinal in the Vatican, a Cardinal Becciu, who may, in fact, I don't think that there's dispository evidence about this, but have sent money to Australia that was in some way connected to the mistreatment of Cardinal Pell. Could you explain that?
Yeah, so Cardinal Angelo Becciu, who was for a time probably the number three sort of ranking person, if you want to look at it that way, in the Vatican after the Pope and the Cardinal Secretary of State, who served fundamentally as the Pope's chief of staff for a period of time, has been in the news lately because he's under investigation for serious acts of financial malfeasance and misconduct related to a number of really bad investments made by the Secretary of State in a London property deal and a number of other mutual funds and other things that have raised a lot of red flags and are under investigation now. Last month, Cardinal Becciu was dismissed from his position in the Vatican, and also was dismissed rather summarily from the rights and duties proper to a cardinal. So Cardinal Becciu remains a cardinal, but he can't actually do any of the cardinal things, like attending the conclave that elects the Pope or standing with the other cardinals at Mass. He no longer has the cardinal rights and privileges. Cardinal Becciu is accused of having been involved in financial misconduct in the Vatican for quite some time. And during some of that time, Cardinal George Pell of Australia was responsible for investigating and cleaning up the finances of the Vatican. And they got crosswise with each other because Cardinal Pell wanted to have an institutional audit of Vatican finances and centralized purchasing power and decision-making on investments. And Cardinal Becciu didn't like those things. And after they got crosswise with each other for a few times, Cardinal Pell had to resign from his, or take a leave of absence from his job, go home to Australia, face a criminal trial. He was convicted of sexual abuse, and then he was exonerated by Australia's Supreme Court. And in recent weeks, it has emerged that one of the people who worked in Becciu's office, who's being now investigated, has made the suggestion or allegation that Becciu sent money to Australia during the time of Pell's investigation, with the implication that this money was used to pay off someone involved in this false prosecution of Pell for a crime from which he was later exonerated. This is being taken really seriously by the Vatican. The Pope has met with the Apostolic Nuncio to Australia. He has met with other people connected to it. And it's being taken seriously by Australian financial authorities, too. It's under the matter has been referred to Australia's sort of federal financial crimes investigative agency, and they're looking into it. So Cardinal Becciu is accused of doing a lot of things related to, you know, that were financial misconduct in the Vatican apart from this. I tend to be skeptical about the idea that a cardinal wired money to Australia to facilitate the criminal prosecution of another cardinal. It just sounds too out there for me to be true.
Sounds medieval.
Yeah, it sounds positively medieval. Yeah. And I tend not to want to think that that's the case now. But as I say, it's being taken seriously by the people who take it seriously.
888-318-7884, our number. J.D. Flynn, our guest. I'm going to keep reading Catholic News Agency, see how the reporting goes on that, because it's a bit of a stunner. It does seem like the Italians, who invented modern accounting, could maybe adopt some modern accounting.
They invented it, and then they've kept up with the same ledger book system that they had been, you know.
Right, like a double ledger, double entry ledger is an Italian invention. They know about money. They just it's obvious that there seems to be some body that's being served by opaqueness rather than clarity in the bookkeeping in the Vatican. Would you say that's fair or no?
There are bodies who are taking advantage of it. I think there's institutional ennui which prevents something that's like a gigantic organization of bureaucrats from wholesale transition of its systems. And then at the same time, there are people who see that and take advantage of it.
Up next, John in Denver, Colorado, listening on 1060 AM. John, go ahead with your question for J.D. Flynn.
Right, thank you. My question is that during this last election, I heard a lot of priests or some, you know, bishops saying, we can't tell you how to vote, but this and that, this, so and so. But I'm saying that it's so obvious that the Democratic platform was all the way down the line was mortal sin, abortion, murdering a baby, killing yourself just before you go to judgment. I forget what that's called, you know, euthanasia, I think, or something.
Right,
and then transgender body mutilization, selling fetal parts to...
Just for a matter of time, John, so you would have preferred priests tell people who to vote for and who they could not vote for. Is that correct?
Well, somebody says, the Catholic News Agency, put down Democratic Party, all the, what they stand for, Republican Party, everything that they stand for, and say, as a Catholic... You can't vote for murder and for mortal sin. Let's dump some more sins on Christ crucified. I'm horrified at what we've done in this election. Okay?
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Let's let J.D. respond to that, because there's kind of two levels of that. One of them includes you, J.D., about why doesn't the Catholic news agencies do it, but also why don't Catholic priests just tell people how to vote?
Hey, John. Well, first of all, I live in Littleton, so we're neighbors. Nice to hear from a neighbor. Second of all, to those questions, why don't Catholic priests just tell us who to vote for? The church has historically refrained from endorsing political candidates because the church believes that, and the church has long taught that the secular domain, the secular world, the sort of implementation of Catholic moral teaching and Catholic social teaching and the way that we organize ourselves politically is properly the domain of the laity. So the church says that it is properly the domain of clerics to teach the faith, to sanctify us through the sacraments, to govern the church, but that the exercise of temporal power, secular power, which we exercise democratically in this country, is principally the domain of lay people, and that it's the job of clerics, of church leaders, to teach the principles by which we should make judgments in the secular sphere, and it's the job of lay Catholics to make those judgments. But the church's goal is rather than to sort of infantilize lay people by taking the place of their faculty for judgment, to give them the tools to make judgment and then to tell them to do it, to do the judgment that that the church teaches is properly ours to make. A lot of people think, oh, it's because priests and bishops are afraid of losing their tax-exempt status. That's not really it. In fact, nobody in the U.S. loses their tax-exempt status as a practical matter for talking about politics from the pulpit.
No, you see preaching practically in churches. Those churches don't lose their status.
That's right. We have a theological vision that differentiates between the sphere that's proper to clergy and the sphere that's proper to laity. And the reason for that is because the church respects that our baptism makes us emissaries of Christ in culture and responsible for, as the Second Vatican Council says, animating the temporal order with the Spirit of Christ. And that means making decisions based upon the principles and doctrine of our church.
Thanks, John. I'm trying to go quick now. So Veronica in North Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio, can you ask your question quickly to J.D.?
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
J.D., I was very concerned that before our election was certified, and it was called, so to say, by the media, Catholic News Agency also stated that Biden was the president-elect, the second Catholic president in our history. And I was quite concerned about that. Would you speak to that?
Sure. We did report on the day that most media began to call the election. Well, we did report on the day that many media began to call the election after some already had done so, that Biden was projected to win the election, that Biden was the projected president-elect. And Biden is projected to win the election. And we cited that by the numerous organizations that have projected Biden to win the election. We stated in the same article that the election had not yet been certified and that there were legal challenges to that projection that had been filed by the Trump campaign. So we reported those facts, but the news of that day was that Biden had begun to be projected by many outlets whose election observers and experts were watching this election, projected to be the president-elect. And so that was the news that we led with. But the story was very clear that the election was not certified, is not yet certified, and that there were legal challenges in play.
What about reporting that he was the second Catholic president? Do you have any squeamishness about that, given his positions on moral issues?
Reporting that he was to be the second Catholic president, well, at the end of the day, we're Catholic because we're baptized or received into the Catholic Church. That's what the Catholic Church teaches, that if I'm baptized or received into the Catholic Church, no matter how far I stray, no matter how far I fall into sin, I am a Catholic, even if to be in the full, to maintain full communion with the church, I need to go to confession and repent of my sins. I need to make public reparation for my positions. The CNA CNA has been clear about Biden's pro-abortion positions, but we also have to report the facts as they are.
Veronica, I'm really delighted that you got on to ask your question of JD. I do think JD, and this is not at all a critique of Veronica. I thought her question was perfectly valid.
Yeah.
We're used to reporting being opinions and not just being straight reporting. And so that when we see straight reporting, we think, what's the opinion behind that? And
right. Why are they thinking?
Right. Yeah. Right. And in practical terms, Joe Biden is a Catholic, and in every practical term, he was projected to be president of the United States. So this is something I really value in what you do. I hope people will continue to read Catholic News Agency, that what they do is reporting, and almost nobody else does it anymore. J.D. Flynn, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Coming up next, Tim Staples, Open Forum for Non-Catholics. If you're not a Catholic, give us a call.